All right, I'm going to interrupt your conversation here and get us started on the next session. So as we indicated, we flipped them. So at this point, we're going to have Mary Grace Parker tell us about the Freight Academy that she's organized for the I-95 Coalition, and then have some discussion about what that might mean for our coalition and how we might undertake some sort of an effort similar. In the back room, it looks like the techies are into their Freight View number 2 session. They closed the door and sequestered themselves. And in the other room, we're going to have some of their demonstrations of the bottleneck project as well as then the truck party project. Okay, are you ready?
I've been with Coalition about 8 years as a staff person. I started out working on the operations program and moved over to support what was an emerging program track in the early 2000s, and that was our intermodal program committee, which is designed to focus on the movement of passengers and goods. And it's been a learning experience for me. My major was highly qualified me for this work as in forensic criminal science. And it is really. And when I did go to engineering positions in transportation agencies, I spent my first 10 years as a uniform officer in the New York State Police. And after about 10 years of doing that and being a patrol officer and an officer, I jumped over to work for the Thruway Authority to run their traffic safety programs. And then somebody said, there's something new coming in. It's something like called ITF. My chief engineer actually called me up to his office and said, it's just a bunch of bull trying to put the defense industry back to work, and it's not going anywhere. So we're going to give it to your office because it'll be gone in about a year or so. Don't do anything. So I built the ITF program at Thruway and all those things. And so, you know, there's sort of been this history of emerging programs in my background, and so not such a brainiac, and I'm lucky maybe to be on the cutting edge of things that may have some interest. I think being here today is a sign that this type of activity does have some interest, and so I'm going to do a quick preemptive strike on this to say that I am no means, as I talk about this program, do not mean to in any way take away from a number of outstanding training programs that are out there in the country that deal with either the graduate, undergraduate level, that involve different areas of freight work, whether it's logistics programs or engineering programs or understanding goods movement, understanding shipping perspectives. Nor do I mean to imply that There are a wondrous great group of academic people around the country in our various transportation centers that do a good job on training us about transportation. But what I am going to take a position today is to say to you that the program I'm going to talk about is born out of the idea that staying the same and do is doing. And to understand the freight industry, if you're really going to be a person in a position of not only managing programs, but creating or responding with public policy initiatives, you need to understand how that type of organizations work. And you need to understand it from the ground up. And I think somebody alluded when we were talking in earlier session about performance measures, you really have to understand how your constituent thinks and what they're doing. And a lot of the historical mistakes we've made in transportation have been trying to sort of fit things into the side of the shoes of the things we know. And this is not an industry that that we know well if we're public sector oriented. And if we do know it, it's changing daily. Certainly the economy in the last couple of years proves that even more. Covered three things today while I talked to you. The first one was why the Identified Coalition even decided to conduct the Freight Academy. Talk a little bit about the Freight Academy structure and then answer some questions that you may have regarding it. There were a lot of reasons that this sort of came about. I mean, there were some very, very clear personal interest issues that sort of started this on. We had held, just prior to the arrival of my new executive director, he's been here for 2 years now, Mr. Joe Shaner, we actually implemented an operations academy. The coalition started out as an operations-based organization in the early 90s dealing with operations management, truck incident management. And we had developed an immersion program for operations. It's a 2-week program where they bring people in from all over the country. They have some of the greatest professional public sector and private sector minds and operations that talk to people about incident management practices and running operations centers and recruiting and retention of staff and so on. And dealing with data. And our program structure, as we talked about that, development and operations academy, one of the smart remarks from one of our steering committee chairs, that there was another program from his agency that he was particularly interested in, was, so next we're going to want to have a freight academy. We went, let's look at that, which our environmental committee did. George came on board, and we just started some of the dialogue about this and was extremely interested because it was a concept he talked to in the past with a lot of people that he met through his career. In terms of the industry itself, there are a series of factors that really drove us to think about why we might want to bring people together in an environment, and I'll leave off the word academy, I'll just call it a training program first, that's focused on freight. And some of that had to do with large increases in freight movement. There was dynamic changes, as you know, in the goods movement industry. There was clearly a need to understand the full freight system from a system perspective. How does it start going into a port? What kind of decisions are made in selecting those ports? And then how things travel throughout that system. Why is it going by rail or not? Why is it going by truck? Where is it breaking up and why is it breaking up in one center versus another? Also, we need to understand integration of freight facilities and operations and how they come together or do not come together in some parts of the country. With community goals. So we saw this clearly as a variety of things that we might want to tackle. The other thing that saw a clear need is the concept of training up the next generation. How many people here are planning people by background? Okay. How many went to school to become freight planners? Rail planners? Truck planners, port planners, urban planners. There we go. But that's exactly the point. I mean, most of the people involved in planning either focus on transportation planning, urban planning. It's not really been a structure that our educational system, and there are some universities that are starting to address that, but clearly nobody in the last 25 years really went to school to graduate as a freight planner. And yet all of a sudden, people were shifting into a new job. If you remember the authorization proposal, the last authorization actually was going to have every state, or I was proposing that every state will have a freight plan. There's going to be all kinds of requirements attached. That's been a little diluted. But the interesting thing was where are they going to come from? And in many cases, when you start to look at the constraints in the agencies, it used to be there were three or four planners, and then they gave somebody the freight program. They gave somebody that's doing the rail program, and somebody that's doing the urban planning. On top of it now, we're also finding that the only planner is the urban planner, and the rail planner, and the freight planner. So the reason I point it out is because for some people, it wasn't not only an issue of training up the one person in the agency, it was how would you do it in a way that was going to give them a significant amount of information and the limited amount of time that they could leave the office that they were back doing their three jobs at. And we saw in talking to our agency personnel, not to get any difference out here, that critical shortage was also being affected by retirements that were coming out within the next 5 years. And when we started this program, and even to the extent that it's represented in this slide, the concept was that there'd be many retirements within the next 5 years. I'm not sure some of your states how they're dealing with the budgetary issues in terms of state employee staffing. My state, New York, up until this last round, dealt with it by having early retirement after early retirement after early retirement. So we lost a critical amount of knowledge, not only at the top of the organization, frankly, but in the middle of the organization. Because at the same time, we didn't have a lot of growth in state government and positions. So again, we always had one or two planners, and they've been the planners for the last 25 or 30 years, and they're deciding to go to Florida and play golf, and if you, especially if you're most of the mid or the northern part coalition states. What we wanted to accomplish was a series of things. It was not meant to duplicate other programs that I'm going to talk about in a minute. It was meant to offer a unique educational experience. We wanted to make that experience unique in every way. Unique in the environment, unique in the intensity of it, unique in the sort of interplay that we had occur in the program. So there was a constant jumping around of a field, hearing somebody speak today about a certain aspect and then going to a site tomorrow and actually seeing that program or that entity in action. We wanted to approach this with the idea that they would see freight movement as a single integrated system. And so in doing that, it was critical to find a location that could give you freight movement on a single integrated system. Where would you have a port that has significant access to terminal operations? Where would you have some possibly on-dock rail operations to look at? Where would you have maybe some regional short line rail activities that were feeding some of the system? Where would you have distribution and goods movement on a very large warehousing basis that was feeding not only rail traffic but also significant truck traffic that was moving out in various different truck sheds out of that region, not just north into New York, but throughout the entire New England region and even in some parts of the South and the Midwest. That we wanted to move our staff up quickly in terms of their learning curve. We didn't want them to leave like the conference and they had a little bit of information and then they got back to their office and after they answered their 4,000 emails from being out a week, they lost about half of what they got because it was sort of dribs and drabs of pieces of stuff over a period of time. We wanted to make sure that they had a common terminology that was presented to them and that in doing that, by giving them a common terminology to understand what's the terminology from the system user's perspective, from the freight community, what do they mean when they're talking about their terminology, from TEUs to, how they make decisions on mode selection. And to make that something that could provide an ongoing dialogue so that both within the academy structure and when they went back to their own communities to deal with people in this type of business, they could understand what was being discussed with them and what some of the terminology was that was used. But we wanted to involve the private sector, and particularly private sector on executive levels in the instruction. We wanted to create that interaction, both in terms of creating a knowledge base from, again, the people who are doing or the people are saying, but also to allow some of these people that might not ever have met an executive to really have a discourse with that actually ran a freight-based organization or program. And I think this is probably, to me, one of the most important things. We wanted to build peer relationships across agencies and jurisdictions. We wanted to create relationships. And I think Teresa corrected me. I can't remember what it was. But when we were first discussing the Operations Academy a number of years ago, it came out of a series of ideas, and I don't know if anybody in this room knows Phil Tarnoff. But Phil was part of a group that a million years ago, so it matters for saying that, went to some place, MIT, Yale, one of those places that I would never have gotten into, for an immersion-type program where they did something with engineering and training, and there were 40 or 50 people that went through this program, and they ended up becoming some of the top people in transportation, whether it was at the university level, whether it was going out and starting companies, or whether it was being transportation professionals that worked their way up through state and national government. And the funny part about it is, as you start to hear what some of the names were, I could think logically in my time in transportation how, now, I thought they all knew each other and had this stuff because they, you know, they had beer at bar at TRB every year that everybody goes to, and that's where it came from. But it wasn't. It was this relationship that was born out of this common, not just academic experience and, you know, rah-rah, you know, go whatever academic sports figure, that it was that experience that they went to this unique program together. And we thought that was really important to build that cadre of people around the nation so that 50 years from now, as they're dealing with each other and they're talking about their common experiences, and I say this as a career government person, there's a lot of mixing of career government people and career political people and career whatever people, and there's been a change over the last few years where you oftentimes find that people have sort of, in my mind, step back a little bit to try to figure out who you are. Are you a careerist? Come up through the ranks? You know, where did you come from? You come out of the private sector. In this case, none of that really matters in the end. We're all people that are in the common goal of realizing that when the public sector deals with freight, they need to understand that community at large. And we want to be the community of practice that knows and understands where they're coming from, and since this academy, and I'll talk about that later, I mean, all the things people talk about, you know, I know you were down in Philadelphia, there were 7 or 8 people that were Freight Academy graduates there, you know, they're talking about emailing questions to each other, and, you know, they started their own little group of peer interaction. We obviously wanted to spend our federal funds, the coalition is federally funded widely, and we did not want to go off on a whole different track from some of the work that's been done and done well. So we started looking at this as a building block on other initiatives that were out there. Certainly, Kay Quinn and Carol Keenan and the people that work in Tony Kirsch's office at Federal Highway have done a tremendous job building a number of professional capacity building programs that are great learning blocks. And as we move forward into our second criteria, the first one we didn't mandate any of these courses as a prerequisite. We will for the second one because, again, now that we've got a seat where we realize that not only do we think it has some value to the people that come as candidates, but we want to promote that idea of ongoing education, especially at a time where it's much easier when you've been working your 70-hour work week to not want to go back and do any particular other academic exercises. But we think these are important. We looked at METRAM, the Global Logistics Certificate Program, which is an excellent program in Southern California. It's very good movement focused and does not necessarily get into all the aspects. Again, not to take anything away from that, but that was not looked at. It's sort of student-oriented or brings in professionals over a period of time. They vary in the classroom structure. They're not necessarily all together for the same time in a unique setting. We looked at the University of Denver. Is anybody here familiar with the University of Denver's program? It's an outstanding program, intermodal program. It costs about $45,000. So we didn't think a lot of public sector people were going to be going to that program. It is really truly aimed towards, you know, the private sector and costing private sector executives in particular. But we had a lot of good work down there. We didn't want to be in competition with them. We really didn't think that their program was ever going to de-evolve down to something aimed towards public sector type people. We looked at the U.S. Merchant Marines, their GMAT program, which is Ministry of Freight. Again, an excellent program focused on bringing in state people to look at their role in statewide planning and freight. Has a lot of really good features, but again, it kind of looks very focused on a planning type function. How are we planning and understanding freight as a clear part of a planning tool? And we also went out and looked around and we saw that there's a lot of, again, good undergraduate and graduate programs that are dealing with transportation planning, that are trying to bring aspects of freight and goods movement into their planning. And frankly, I just did a guest lecture last week at RTI, and I was talking to the professor there, and we talked about the fact that in 10 years, you know, hopefully you won't really have to have these kind of programs because they're going to filter in to the university-based programs. Although another half of me says, until you're out in public works, doing public works work, you don't necessarily think of the same kind of questions you do when you're sitting as a student, because you start to realize all of the differences in planning and policy and politics when you get into the public sector that you have to sort of focus on. And again, we saw that they were all good programs, but we thought they suggested a need for something different. We thought the thing that was different was a program that recognized several factors. You've got a lot of mid-level people there that are touching freight, some senior-level people. Some of them have been in government 15, 20, 25 years. Some of them have been in government for 5 years. They're in a program either by design or by accident of either, you know, they have the training or the office is short or they're a planner and they grab them. That there were parts of organizations that needed to know freight that didn't necessarily deal directly with planning. And some of that involves operations people. Some of that involves people that are in the policy structure. So having a broader base group of people, besides just a traditional planning type approach, person, was critical. And that's what we needed to deliver that to them in was a very intense study that was very focused, very direct, played off of each other very well, and frankly kept them running from dusk till dawn. So that not at any time during the course of that program did they feel anything other than they were being immersed in freight, morning, noon, and night, that they were eating, breathing, and sleeping freight. So the way we aligned it, it was a week-long program. We were really tempted to do a two-week program. That's what the Operations Academy does. But realistically, quite frankly, one of the things we saw was that in the operations environment, again, I ran a traffic management program, there's usually two or three other people in the department that can deal with the day-to-day operations. And while it's difficult, you could pull them for 2 weeks. Very, very difficult. I don't know how many people here could easily leave for 2 weeks, given the amount of work that's going on right now, particularly with, you know, again, all of the various modal aspects that are going on with planning now. It's not just your freight plan, it's your freight rail plan, and if you're maritime oriented geographically in terms of your state or your MTO, you're looking at water issues, and so those people who just leave was not really out for them. So we knew we needed to squeeze this in 5 days. We also recognized that the difficulty of doing a two-week program, the Operations Academy has kind of dealt with this because we're actually at the Merchant Marine Academy in Maryland, is where they host this thing, and people come from all over the country. and they actually stay the weekend and they have a series of events built into it. We thought that would be much more difficult. The first thing we wanted to do in setting up the program was to have a pre-course assignment. And so when you come to the Freight Academy, before you even get there, you get this package of materials that involve all kinds of articles and papers and studies and just a binder full of things to read, including an entire page of extra reading, which is just links to links to links to other suggested reading material. And people could come there, they had some qualifying information they had to read, and then they could go ahead and do as much reading as they wanted to beyond it. The other thing we made them do, and this was probably one of the most excellent things we found, we had each student had to develop a regional profile, regional freight profile, and there's a series of questions they had to answer in there, and it got into, you know, how much distribution in warehousing, how many miles of freight, how many structural organizations ran their infrastructure that they have. I'll pick up my friends in Maryland. Well, they got the Maryland DOT, they got the Maryland State Highway, they have the Maryland Transportation Authority, who ran the airports, how many of these different pieces did they have, how did they intermingle, what were their volumes, what were their products, you know, were they shipping out, what volume of agricultural products out of their state in the year, Delaware being a big chicken state, for those of you who may not know. So what were those commodities moving in and out of the state? Surprisingly, when we had our first day and we went through the regional profiles, every person there said, so these people have been there 5 years, some of these have been there for 25, said, we didn't know that things look this way in our state. We didn't know we had some of the data or they had to go find it here. And now they're able to find it because they realize that, you know, they go, hey, the market had during the data points that we asked for that they would have never thought. But to be desperate and not, it's like kind of like being back in school, which is funny too, because like, you might turn something in at work that's not quite done, but you would never, no matter how old you are, turn on paper that isn't done. So they, you know, they really rose to that occasion, but they found it a very valuable exercise. Within the next five days, when we put these people in constant exposure to people from the freight community, we wanted them to see shippers and freight system customers and look at all the elements involved in this movement. We wanted them to have field visits with what we call active assignments, that when they went to a field visit, we didn't just pick a field visit that was go to this place here. We picked a field visit that was specifically tied to one of the elements of classroom instruction. So if they were listening to a panel of rail people talk about decisions on rail investments and, you know, how they were using the rail system and where the rail system was expanding, the challenges they faced. They then saw a correlation to that, to, you know, in one case it was a short line railroad that talked about, you know, how they became a piece of a modal system because they had a connector that was vital to an area that could be not otherwise used for distribution warehousing unless everything went out of your truck. And it was in New Jersey. One thing New Jersey people had in common is they all hate trucks. Which is the reason why Harrisburg, Pennsylvania has a really great distribution and warehousing center today. You know, we talked about that, but that's absolute truth. The greatest asset for Harrisburg, Pennsylvania distribution and warehousing is people in New Jersey that hated trucks and drove them out. But we wanted to see that, and so not only did they hear this discussion about the short-term rail, but then when they visit the Raritan Center, which is a ongoing public-private partnership for distribution and warehousing centers, they saw where that regional rail short line piece is going right in to be part of an on-dock rail system. The next thing we did is we developed what we call capstone teams, and I'll talk a little bit later about capstone. But everybody there had to do a follow-on project when they left. They were given five different freight problems, I think two focused on freight bottlenecks, one focused on a freight resiliency plan, one focused on the challenges of creating port availability in terms of space for the ship in the Panama Suez Canal and what you do. And actually, they had several options, including whether they wanted to move and build a bi-state port. And then there was a fifth one, and I can't recall what it was off the top of my head. But we divided them into teams. And they weren't teams with five people from the same state. We broke teams up around different disciplines and people from different states and different MTOs. The last thing we did is we created a mentor review panel for the capstone project. So once they left and they're now complete, they're actually still at the very end of their process and completing their capstones, we have a mentor panel that's been coaching them through that. That's just an example of what the wing looks like. It starts over here. We bring them in on Sunday night. They have to be there by 4 o'clock in the afternoon and in their room. And they had to report in with all of the materials and pick up their books, and then they had to report over here for a little opening session, which included an introduction, and then the corrected keynote speeches, which was my executive director talking about kind of the goals, and this was the inaugural academy. And actually, we were very pleased that 21st, actually on Sunday, came to New Brunswick, New Jersey. We put all that spin together. Came to the Brunswick, New Jersey on a Sunday to talk to this group and really drive home the point. And he was very sincere. And most people in this room, you've probably met Tony, but you've met him along the way. He was very sincere about how important he thinks this type of thing is as a building block for the kind of work that they want to do in the trade office. Now, somewhere in here, even you see that here's our name, well, I guess I got this a little time. I'm going to stress that, as I talk a little bit about the rest of the agenda, is the most important word to focus on after site is the word academy. Again, as you mentioned, I spent 10 years in the state police. We ran it like an academy. The only thing we didn't do was get them up at 3 in the morning and make them run until they puked. Other than that, we ran it like an academy. They had peer groups. They had peer pressure in terms of, you know, being the group, not being the group that didn't get their stuff done. They were up at 6 in the morning. They were down at breakfast at 6:30. They had they wanted to fix their hair and get up earlier. They had breakfast together. They finished. They got on the bus together. You did not want to be the person who was being the last thing to chase after you on the bus because the bus left at a certain time. And then they went to our host, which was Rutgers University, served as a host facility. They provided us the training facility at Tate. They have a fabulous training room and just perfect rest for lectures and interaction. And they made that available to us as a host and actually didn't charge us anything. Did a lot of administrative work on site for us. Worked with us to use their bus company and everything in order to be able to move our people around as a group. And they started off that morning and they had an opening. Most people here probably know Lillian Barone. And Lillian Barone was our opening speaker and talked about sort of giving this idea of why this was important from the work she's done in her career, from her time at Eno Foundation, and a few opening words from George. And then it all began. Anne Strauss-Clear is one of my consultants who worked on this, and Anne, there's not a lot of people that know the GUS movement world better than Anne, and Anne started right from the beginning talking about GUS movement, how it works and how it operates. And that's how we took that week through week. We brought in panels. They had rare people coming in throughout the week. They had a panel of somebody from the New Jersey State Trucking Association, Gail Pop, the director, came in, talked about the trucking perspective and the things she loves and hates about the public sector and what we do and how we do and the things that we don't do. But also very constructive. One of the things is every one of these curriculums has a defined model of what people are supposed to cover. And then we went out and we got people to cover it. And if we couldn't get the person we wanted, we went to another one. What we try to avoid, and again, not to be critical, that often happens when you put together conferences. And then you lose somebody, so they send somebody else. It's not the same level of speaker. So the qualifications of the speaker, the dynamic ability of the speakers were all critical. Every one of those things had to be a part of the process. program, so it wasn't just the content they required and needed to make sure they checked off and covered, but it was the dynamic of the person that was part of it. They were, we actually had attributes defined for the instructors so that we knew what we were looking for in each type of instructor, either public or private. And that helped us when we went out recruiting. 99% of our instructors were all private sector. So we were talking to them about what we needed and who we wanted. It was somebody we didn't know, for example, if we were pulling in somebody from the rail industry and it wasn't one of our familiar suspects because it was a point we wanted to cover, we could talk about the kind of attributes we were looking. And if they didn't have that person available, they often, in two cases, were able to suggest people that were just as good, if not better, to come in because they understood the attributes of what we were looking for as well as the curriculum itself. The field visits, as I said, were about, I know this is small, but basically there's times you hear where they talk about particular aspects of freight or logistics or, you know, learning piece about understanding how freight works, and that correlated to a later field visit. New York Shipping Association, which is at the port of Elizabeth, provided a tremendous opportunity where they gave us their facility for an entire half day to use so that we were at and on the port to do the port tour. But then they brought in a series of people through New York Shipping Association that were our lecturers, again, that cover things in terms of decision-making, how terminal operators make decisions, how shippers make decisions about which ports are coming in and out, what are the kind of the performance metrics they need to meet in order to make sure that somebody doesn't jump their port and go down to Newark. So those were all really important. And then go out and physically see on site the things that they heard discussed. We went through, and within this, they saw different methods there again of the week. So there was every mode they were exposed to. They saw rail, they saw ports, they saw water, they saw heard people coming in talking about trucking sector. We had people coming in and talking from, there were only a handful of public sector people. We did have some people coming in from New Jersey, tax and finance, who actually talked about some of the decisions that are made or not made within the tax department. And their statements that they're trying to change as they become more familiar with understanding how tax implications influence whether or not someone moves freight in and out of a particular location. We ended the week in New Jersey at the Liberty International Airport, Newark, with a morning that we spent learning all about air freight cargo and going through air freight, which, by the way, when you do that piece, my bit of advice is you got to have really good connections because the security issues are so outstanding today that it was a real piece of work to bring anybody in to that back room, let alone 30 people, or 35 of the carrying in, the staff, and then the 32. But we ended up there, and then we closed with something that was important, which was a recognition ceremony for the people that attended in their time, and both their certificates, which they received. They don't get their CEUs until they're done with the capstone project, and Rutgers did review the program and is awarding any of the graduates that apply for continuing education units as part of it. This is an example of the field visits we went to. We tried to group them, again, around a day where they heard, not necessarily going and hearing everything about the kind of work, let's say, that distribution solutions, port logistics, the kind of, you know, longer, more descriptive work. We didn't match that right up to the visit. We usually have the more longer panel presentations describing the stretch of stuff maybe the afternoon before, the morning before, and then later they went to the site. A quick 5-minute reminder of what they heard, and then out onto the floor. And in every one of these sites, they were out on the floor. They weren't looking through windows. They had to walk through, see, walk up to see the conveyor belts, and how they bring them. My personal favorite is right up there at the top, Erica Schell. I have a now 12-year-old daughter. She was 11 back in the fall. She has never cared about anything I've done in my professional career. So she heard me on the phone talking about going to Erica Schell. I work out of my home. And she came to the Greater Summit. So she actually paid attention for this week. I was out of town, and I think she was looking to see if I was coming home or anything. And then, looking at a container terminal, and we picked two different logistics and distribution centers. Air Pascal is one company doing one thing, has one way they do things, because they're only managing, their whole system is based on the way they manage. They're also servicing a very specific type of clientele. Very busy active stores, very small, but absolutely like no warehouses. We got the stores over there, the size of this area. Everything comes in almost daily. And all their inventory is cataloged so that they know that, you know, there's been a great buy on the blue teal hoodie in size medium. And so you'll watch these boxes come through, and it's based on stores that will drop in five blue hoodies and two pink, and that's all packaged and go in that store because it knows exactly what that inventory needs for that store. The opposite, which is distribution solutions, they'll take anybody on who wants to come in. They do Macy's, they do Bed Bath & Beyond. They have multiple types of structures going on within their own organizations for how. So they're moving a bunch of different clientele through their system, and you learn a lot of interesting things as you're there. So it wasn't just looking at the physical structure. We then had opportunities to talk about who their clientele is and what they do when you come back, and we have these retreat sections at the end. And one of the things I learned is most distribution warehousing centers do not sign long-term leases. If they can, they never sign anything more than a five-year lease, 10 is optimum. Because they want to be able to move as the industry moves. And a part of that is based just on if the technology changes so that their footprint changes and it's cheaper to go to a new facility, they want to abandon and move. So where that becomes important, we talked in some of the capstone project work. So now when you're sitting there and the industrial development people are banging on the governor's office and want you to spend $100 million of your transportation funds, because if you do that, this distribution center is going to overnight. You might want to know if you're going to stay there more than 5 years. Those are the kind of things that you didn't realize until you began to understand what some people talk about the way they did. Hall Food Distribution Center is the largest refrigerated retailer maybe in the United States, certainly on the East Coast. And it's a building that's over 1 million square feet, and you go from sort of dry packaging to cold packaging to a sub-zero freezing packaging facility. And then hearing about how their technology differs, how their delivery schedules differ based on having this type of goods. And then learning something really interesting, which is we have to go up on the top of their roof because they're implementing one of these new solar systems that are these little roll-out plastic things that go in. And they've outfitted their entire building because of energy costs. They're almost 70% green. We learned some side things along the way. In terms of instructors, I said this at the beginning, I'll say it again. There were zero academic institution-based instructors. No one from Rutgers taught, which allowed to make them understand when they wanted to partner with us that we were happy to use our facility and happy to have some graduate students or undergrads. We had room to sit in, have some monitors or auditors, but we were going to present this program from as much as we could from a practitioner level to again, not intrude or repeat those programs we saw that were already out there. And when we looked at instructors, we really wanted to get executive level people. The senior level executives, and we have a combination. We brought in extremely high levels of people out of the railroads, the CSX system, one of the most senior people. We brought in, even the distribution warehousing people didn't send like the operations floor manager. All the refrigerated goods was Mr. Hall, the president, and he came personally and talked. Through all of the aspects of his business. And that was important because you know, that showed them not only the interest, but it was clear, and people talked about this afterwards, the students said it made them believe that the private sector wants to have a dialogue with us. That was clear to them that by putting in that kind of time that they really do want to have a dialogue. And the other thing it provided by having high-level people from those companies, you didn't end up, and even in a couple of positions we had in the public sector, the last thing you want to do is in this kind of program, when you start to get into some program question and answer, is just have somebody sitting there saying, well, no, that number has some policy issues, I can't really answer that. You don't want to be constrained by, I'm not the right person or I can't say. So again, it provided a unique experience to interact and learn. Clearly our participants found the classroom sessions very valuable. We were worried that the field trips would dominate everything and they would not want to sit in class. But also again, in looking at them, they were very impressed with the quality of the speakers and the instructors. And part of this program that was so critical, we picked New Brunswick, New Jersey, and Rutgers, although we had, and I was very popular in the academic world for a while, Rich Teresa. I had universities up and down the 995 corridor, wanted to be my best friend, wanted to host it. The problem was they didn't have certain prerequisites. We wanted a port. And that being a low set of port, a port. We needed to have good and variable distribution and warehousing facilities. We wanted to have a variety of type of distribution and warehousing commodities that were served, because again, commodities determine some of the things that freight does. It was nice to have some type of rail infrastructure that was heavily relied on nearby. We wanted to have an area that, if not the area itself was congested, at least was in a location where congestion was a key factor in influencing and dragging down profitability of freight. And so that there were clear examples of how businesses were reacting to or developing concern about the need to address, you know, the bottom line cost of freight when it came to moving on highway rail. And the critical thing was to do a 5-day immersion program and get them through all these things. You wanted to find a place where all of this could be within a proximity, so that from the hotel to the university to the site to the field business, they were never on. We had this big, beautiful bus, great bus driver, and we actually drove the Rutgers basketball team on the weekends, so we had a lot of great stories. But we were within all of our field business within 20 minutes. So if you were driving, they were never on the bus more than 25 or 30 minutes. And that was critical, because there was no way you were going to create the type of immersion. And I think it was said that when we were trying to recruit our candidates, obviously this was last summer, so you could, you know, last spring, last summer, so you could think what was happening in the agencies and travel restrictions. And Marilyn Fisher, who's the Deputy Secretary of Virginia, one of my vice chairs on my board, wrote me a note and said, I was a little worried about this, and then the travel request came across my desk and I had a copy of the agenda, because I was worried it was going to look like a week-long conference. It doesn't look like anything I want to go to, but I'd be too tired. So, but that was key, because, you know, it's getting harder and harder to talk about going to conferences. So selling this as a program that was a professional development opportunity really required that kind of volume. This particular academy class, there were 30 attendees. They represented a variety of agencies. We had state DOTs, MPOs, port authorities, toll authority, one county planner, because one of the MPOs has a very, very active good movement committee in our corridor, and they contacted us and said, would it be okay if we sponsor somebody from one of our county planning offices, because we have a critical freight project that's going on within our MPO, and we're trying to get them to understand what it is we're trying to do. We said, okay, and they came. A lot of planners, some of what I now call freight planners, most by accident or assignment, they were now the rail person or with urban planners. That was particularly interesting because we had several people that were strong career urban planners, and they were really good at talking about and bringing up and thinking to the future some of the land use issues. And they were really right spot on with the idea of how land use application could have a big say across transportation and freight planning and how we use stuff and how we plan. We had operations personnel. We had somebody from Virginia who actually oversees traffic management planning for the state of Virginia. And obviously with I-95 and I-81, I-64 in those corridors was critical from their perspective, Norfolk Port, to really understand as they develop, and again, we talked about it earlier in the phone session, that is our system performing in a way and operating in a way that it can meet the demand? And so Virginia said, we're incentive from our operations department because we feel they need to understand freight. Again, the feedback was excellent and constructive. And what I was described to me in Philadelphia 2 weeks ago, I met the quote that somebody said that the network relationships that they built were invaluable and indelible, that they felt that they were going to be there throughout their professional careers. And if they, as they move forward in their careers, they knew that if they asked a question of this person, they'd have this common background experience to draw from and they have. What comes next? Freight Academy 2. It'll just always be the Freight Academy. We have a website and, you know, I should have downloaded a nice pretty picture of the website and all the domains that we bought up, but I was kind of constructing this after I just come back from some leave. It's planned for spring 2010. I should point out that our Freight Academy was advertised nationally. We sent notices out through ASHO. There's officially nobody did get notices out. It was sponsored in a way that anybody could attend from anywhere in the country. Actually, we had an attendee from Mississippi. Probably if we had more lead time than we did, because this was our first one locking a date, we would have had a little bit more. We're actually working with Federal Highway and ASHTO, who are going to sponsor scholarships for McGashua is going to do 4 to 5 scholarships for the next Freight Academy. The Federal Highway is going to scholarship at least 4 or 5 of their Federal Highway Division staff. And that was an observation that was interesting that, and for those of us that were in Philadelphia, it's pretty clear with all due respect to our federal partners, federal employees are in as much need of good movement and immersion and freight immersion as anybody in any other level of government. So Tony is going to be working with us to send 4 or 5 to 6 people to this academy. And we're also going to be talking to, we've got some interest from a couple of the NCO organizations. And again, what we did in our case, we had some scholarships that were sponsored by the coalition. We had a series of qualifications people had to apply. We had a review committee that looked at those applicants, decided who was going to be accepted, and then for whatever variety of reasons they looked at who was going to be scholarships based on ours. So we'll be working with those organizations. My guess will be we'll probably provide a criteria to the outside organizations and then we'll leave it to them to provide, you know, scholarships to people. So hopefully it will probably be around March, April. The reason it moved to spring, by the way, is we did this in October, and we knew when we were doing our Freight Academy in October that it was going to be a difficult time because of the Christmas season. But it was very hard to find the time, and part of it had to do with when our federal fiscal year ended for those funds. We got a short extension because we engaged them before the 30th. But the reality was, we knew going into it that it's not the optimum time of year. They rose to the occasion. The fact that it was an economy that, you know, was in a bit of a drag last year, you know, they agreed across the board that it wasn't a bump for years. They wouldn't be able to do it. But March tends to be a good time, both in terms of the industry And actually, as we've looked a little closer, as things are settling down and some of the annual meetings, there seems to be a good period of time. So we're probably looking at around March. And again, it'll be open nationally. We hope to be able to have a larger lead time and be able to work with organizations throughout the country to make sure we provide that availability. I don't think there's anything here that's a takeaway that isn't applicable in some other part of the country. And we've had some dialogue, you know, initially with Federal Highway about the idea that, you know, we would look to maybe see if we could co-sponsor some of these down the road and maybe some other regions of the country, you know, find someone else who wants to work with us and have, you know, two or three other core locations in the country where you might keep all the core attributes but add on. And I think somebody was saying, you know, for Tracy, you know, you take this area, you might want to have a strong focus on some of the waterway issues and some agricultural issues. And, you know, so if you could build them so they moved around off each other. And I'm not saying this, and I said this to Jason when we talked, for us to hang on to it, but simply to drive the point home that I think if you can keep the framework and build off of it. That idea of having the program that 20 years from now, people say, I'm afraid to have me graduate. That doesn't mean something professionally, and I think at a time where it's going to be getting harder and harder to get funding, time, money, either office time when you're down to the only person in your office, to have those kind of skills. And even I know in my own state, one of the things my state has done is cut virtually every tuition reimbursement program that used to exist in public employment. So the days of people easily going in and developing themselves professionally is going to, you know, certainly going to get more difficult. We're working on, as I said, these capstone projects where they take a project, they're going to, they take a bit on that. Because of the three slides I thought I lost in here, I found two of them and I guess I didn't do this one. But just what we kept some groups left with problems, working in teams, not all in the same location, they're spread out. They're answering a problem. And in answering that problem, they have to put together basically a 10-page response. And they have to do it as a backup document to then correspond to a PowerPoint presentation that they would be asked to come in at an agency level and present to the executive of their agency. And how they'll do that is, again, because it's a simulated exercise, our chairman of the coalition, Neil Peterson, and people know Neil, is just an advocate of transportation and betterment of people and their skills. We're actually going to have a review board that's going to be like a sort of a creative panel of three or four executives that Neil's working with us, that he'll bring in throughout the coalition leadership, and they'll actually put on a simulated presentation so that the groups can be done through a webcast, and the group is going to present the problem, there'll be some backup material that goes and enters, they'll present the problem in their presentation, and then the executives will actually ask questions and then grade that and send them back, so we'll get some feedback. And the whole idea of this exercise is to actually take what they did and say, okay, now if you went back and you actually had a problem, would you know where to look, would you know who to talk to, would you know how to put together a response, and could you go in the room and actually say, okay, here's my freight plan, or here's my solution to my freight problem. That's a work in progress. It hit a whole bunch of things, including some of our only people really are the only person at the agency, so we had to give a couple of extensions because some of the teams were literally swallowed in stimulus planning, but we're working on wrapping it up, and when we get done with that, we know that there'll probably be some slight revisions in the approach to how we did it, maybe a little more time on fire pre-work, getting the teams together. We sort of defined them that week, and in hindsight, we think we would have defined them and encourage them to start to know each other at least virtually before they got there. And that's it.
Is 30 a good number to try to both?
It was just right. I mean, you could have platform-wise, you know, logistics-wise, you could have gone to 35.
probably ran into this. That was a pretty good number for institution you're asking. So they let us push them up to about, maybe she was in like 5 or 6 on the floor. So you really end up having like, you know, 5 or 6 what you end up having staff, so like between myself, the administration, the staff, and that, you know, we have a bunch of people. It was about the right size. I think the other thing they did is it was big enough for, you know, you can never have other meetings, but like, because of personalities, there's people that gravitate to the garden. I think there were a few people that, you know, definitely were glad they didn't work in that other agency. which is like, but they ended up, ironically, that one case, they ended up on the same platform too. So one of our discussions with them a couple weeks ago, the same kind of issues on the way people came, is that what, and this doesn't seem to be one of the younger groups, you're in front of all the time, too. And that's what, you know, there's just, you can do a whole behavioral thing in the text, so I want to be the presenter, but I don't want to write the paper. And there actually had one group that was struggling with it. Someone absolutely wants to be the presenter from the executive, but they just want to take the room. And it's just like at work, right? I mean, it's like, you know, these are the lessons. But yeah, that's what I would say is a good number. The other reason why New York was good, by the way, is that there's actually one of the things. It's very inexpensive here in Niagara, both from New York, from anywhere in the country. There was rail access in the corridor. You had DWI, which was a big Southwest city, so you can't tell that often enough. So people had a lot of rail options, a lot of competition with the
I think you said that there's 30 people. You were thinking of having 5 scholarships, but some of those are just the 995 troopers.
No, I'm saying ASCO is looking at doing the 5 scholarships out.
And then they
probably do one to each region.
Okay, and then this group could decide somehow we do
that's what I'm saying. Okay. That's part of when we get struggling together is, you know, offer candidates, and candidates have requirements. So we're looking at doing, like in my conversation with Rio, we're saying, well, why wouldn't we just, we'll give you the qualifications for candidates. And then Rio's thinking he'll go to each of the actual regions and say, okay, you guys nominate and provide. I mean, and there's some things, I mean, there were little things that were amazing, like go back to that History Academy. People understand that even grown-up professional people, when we said you're with us night and day, you're not leaving, you can't go visit your mother in the middle of the day, you can't skip a, if you haven't lived in New York City, you can't skip morning, noon, and night, because you go to three times at the very end of the night, sometimes, yeah.
And then, what was the registration fee if you had to pay 15,000?
No, our costs, which included, we did a package too. We covered the hotel costs, we covered all of the meals, we had to rent a bus, and we worked with kids because we had to rent a bus. The cost for academy applicants for the week was $3,500. And that's excluding their physical transportation fees. But everything on site was covered. They didn't have to do meals, we vouchered. What we did for meals is, we tend to get the cabin, we ate together. We had several nights where we ate out at restaurants and we set up a voucher to spend out of time with the restaurant so they were able to go in and they had a fairly good menu to drop. And again, it kept people, you know, it kept people together. I mean, I've been on kids for a long time and I still have quite a few people I bothered with, the people that were so much in the classroom.
Was still
kind
of fun.
No.
That was 5 days,
so
I pretty much had it, or
just did it. I mean, you could have, you know, in terms of content, another day would have been nice. Physically, by Friday, they were done. I mean, they were really done. And they were tired.
Yeah.
So they have reunions, or they are being new reunions? We had our first reunion, mini-reunion.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Was my group
done?
Oh,
did it?
Yeah.
Oh,
Jim went in.
Loud
out.
You were an advisor.
It sounds like you're talking about a wide range of views and backgrounds, but how much did you touch on during the week on the interaction between the private sector and the public sector? Has that taken the regulation of, you know, operations and things like that?
We did train them totally, if we did have something here that we talked about, couldn't have that regulation for first. And the reason we did that is because you could go find that program. We really tried to focus on the planning, the policy, the political, and the practical aspects. How I make those kind of decisions. You know, I'm here that I look at as a shipper. Things that we talked about, distribution and warehouse. I finally surprised her. I was not for and that was, I didn't go to the room, I'm like, what? I'm sitting here laughing because I remember when I was on the town board, my town was part of the 98 investment for a 10-year tax deferment on public dividends because I said, we didn't take it. And it was, the tax deferment. We tried. But we gave them a ton of back on the page. Now, one of the things we did do that was a public sector program, I taught it. Next time around, I actually had somebody who was one of my class attendees who had a trucking background, who worked at Ford for a public system. But was talking about public sector role in trucking, and what we did is we focused on sort of best practice programs, not what the regulations are, but here's a series of programs that we've done around the country where agencies have been proactive in saying, I'm not going to make it so impossible for a truck to get another side permit that we'll never have anybody moving over side roads because they'll have lost the job before they get a permit. But recognizing that, we should probably make individual get permits accountable. Better than information is faster to them. If they all look the same in future, it takes them on nothing. Unless they're commercial vehicle section people, the average trooper or police officer knows literally nothing about trucks. So I can't stop them because they don't want to look stupid. So, we talked about, that's been the way of dealing historically. Some people have done in the early opinion. We just made articles. We took example agencies that were thrown out there and said, I'm gonna want to use your state's tax and finance and your state DOT to develop a portal for one-stop shopping. So all the data goes in, all the companies put in one time for off the tax, it was off the EMV. They still get 5 sets of credentials. Large truck association says, I don't care, I get 5 credentials. That I have it in one, it goes to everybody, the data shared, everybody else. And now the data is always up to date. So we try to use that type of perspective to say, as the freight people, like one of the examples I give in my lecture is, how many people in this room knew, and I asked the question, how many people in this room, there were a lot of them worked as the freight person at the DOT in New York, how many people in this room have know the person that's in charge of the commercial vehicle program at the DMV? None of them. But that's pretty important, when we looked at these best practices, we said, look at the kids. They had, New York was one of them, formed, forget the CDO, they created a CDO business team, and they didn't worry about what technology, they started looking at all of their systems and their policies. And so that's the kind of thing we want to make, because that's the kind of stuff that you can have control over, who you know, who you talk to, who you trust. And then you could stop a ton of stuff in there, but I think we try to focus on policy planning programs, and then the practice challenge is seeing how they can build them. So how your policies impact that, what they're looking to come through, how they operate for the next time, you think about creating a distribution warehouse center in Seattle, you might want to go talk to your state trucking association director who would have told you that the only way to get interstate thruway, something that happened in the county last day is to go through the beautiful blue collar town of Indiana, which is not that far. And so now all of a sudden the state of New York was a big bad guy, and what was the economy economic development issue. But I think probably one of the best things that's happened in my opinion, and this was touched on in the academy, the development of the trade movement, which a lot of the NGOs are doing, probably going to be some of the best things that's going to help us to be really successful.
Do you encourage a particular level of person to be a participant in this? I mean, in this room we have people who are, planning management, probably a dozen or 20 people working for them, and we have people who are, go through the entry level professionals.
We targeted pretty much, I would say, we call them mid to high level people involved in trade programs. So by new level, they might be a long-term staff, they might be a senior staffer, they might be a bureau manager. We try to avoid, we suggested that, they have at least, 5 years of experience. We try to avoid the person who just came in to the agency and really didn't have agency operated. But we left it somewhat discretionary, and it was interesting because in one agency, they actually sent the manager and one of their staffers. And it was interesting because the staffer clearly had a lot more experience than the manager. The manager came from another process and that's how they went. But again, in some of it, it's interesting for personality. We had two people withdraw. Because the idea that they were going to have to, we really meant they were going to have to show up on Sunday afternoon, and they weren't getting out of there till Friday afternoon. We had two people actually come, but interestingly, they were extremely high level, some of the higher level applicants. And it wasn't, work. It was, you want me to come on Sunday.
What was your experience? You had 30 participants in this. You got 130 applicants, or did you throw the full bus?
We had more applicants initially. Well, we had about 50 applicants. Then when we screened them and they understood, we lost a lot of initial applicants because they misread the scholarship availability, and if you don't put our scholarships only available to people that were enrolled in the coalition state. So right away we lost a significant amount of them because, again, our goal is to have our dates and within the next couple of months if people can put them into the budget cycles. But we also hit up against people applied, and then we threw about 10 applications which are just because people got traveled. The travel letters came out saying that you didn't put anything. We had a number of people say, in about the process, you need to be better notified, doesn't matter. And that happened in case of two people that were eligible for scholarship. Even though they weren't in scholarship, they could not that could not help. So we're going to write a letter saying they will be traveled.
What kind of feedback did you get from your private sector teachers and they feel it was valuable for them?
We actually asked them to evaluate the session, give us some suggestions, and they did. And they were very positive about it. They liked the idea of bringing them to people who were one person commented and said to me, I always could be in to see the executive director, the secretary of the agency, but I would never be able to sit and talk. It was actually me to call. He said, I would never be able to sit and talk to the people who are going to be there long after they're gone. Because conventionally, I'm not supposed to, someone like me is supposed to talk to someone like that. But that's who I really want to talk to. And that was really an interesting thing to hear, that the protocol was broken because they like that. That they could have this interactive discussion because they all know what we don't know. The people at the top don't step. and so, you know, the grades now, but if you want to define and continue a new kind of culture and organization, it's a crazy question. And so, yeah, that's the question, but that's one thing that's unearned, is when you make that comment, he said, I could walk in tomorrow and I could see I set New Jersey on fire if I asked to go in and see what led to New Jersey DOT policy. Paul Truman, I wanted to see Paul Truman, but the policy guy I'm not talking about. But, you know.
You
have
listed a private sector participants. It looks like most of them were in the freight business, that is, carriers of one kind or another, as opposed to people who are what we call shippers.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a deliberate decision on your part, or?
I'm not sure it was deliberate. I think that in my concept of my next one, I might look at trying to have a shipper panel, or at least a panel that's meant for shippers. Some of that is, I think, frankly, disturbing by a little bit when we got to the really interesting things and stuff. I would probably look at, more, at least one or two shippers. For our keynote dinner, which was really, even our keynote dinner speaker was not just, a fluff speaker, it was really a very pointed discussion. And it was Director of our shipping operations for IKEA. And listening to him talk and how he made decisions right now through who we use and how we use them, and was pretty fascinating. But actually, it's been my experience, even in some stuff I've done with Mara and some stuff, it's been hard to get in the room. But I would ideally like to find some way to integrate some sort of shape.
One of your goals there in terms of the future was partnering with other organizations to bring in the rest of the country. So tell us what you put your mind for that. Obviously, this is a reason I have interest in doing something like that. How do you work this?
Well, my thought is that would be nice, we could run these every year. And you could never run out of the value of, that thing you finished in New Jersey, but the fact of the matter is, there are trends in freight that change. There are some trends that exist in some regions of the country that still have all of the modal aspects. So they have short term level, but have commodities, have environmental issues. California, there's negatives in California that doesn't pop up to some of the cutting edge environmental stuff. Come to this part of the country and since that here, there's a whole issue with agriculture. And it's changing agriculture. It's not my agriculture where I live, where we're just milking cows. You're buying milking cows and growing corn for fuel. And that certainly changes the difference of how you think about corn. And shipping it, where you're shipping it, and when you're cutting it, shipping it, and kept. So my thought has been, in the conversations that I've had with Tony, is again, I see our federal money and excessive responsibility, this is just now, of course, to be a part of this program interaction and not just take the federal money and run someplace else. How do you build off the mini child or how do you build off the federal higher special development? Again, on ours, we're going to be looking more at professional development courses. For example, if they don't have one already, at least one or two of baseline courses that go online. So that's why for our next academy, one of the scholarship requirements is going to have to have taken or been through one of those professional development programs, because the reason why you can't go online and take it. The importance still needs more tests. Where I see it is, instead of having a bunch of competing programs that, what are they teaching, could you take a core curriculum that everybody agrees is a good base curriculum, and then if you then go out and say, so maybe you do 2010 on the East Coast, and you go out midway year, the next year of 2011, and you hold one in the Midwest somewhere, it's got the attributes. And then maybe you hold one in 2012. I like to hold one every 6 months, but I don't think the reality is capable of it. But can you potentially move around, you know, and have this banner, this club, have this name? So like I said, the Operations Academy, for a whole lot of reasons, and many people from the country listening to us, no need for us to move, we should stay in one place, it makes sense. I don't think the phrase system is as stationary and public traffic management program. Just say, one, you know, what you see in the east of the Mississippi is always going to be in the city. And then you provide the opportunity to flow people through, both in terms of people in that part of the country that they need to know. And we're also a changing freight program and freight system. So it would be really nice if I was in, you know, other parts of the country that may decide to deal with, you know, other issues that may not be germane to my physical structure right now with my freight setting today, to go and see what company, you know, to be a part of the program that may be more germane to my little piece of the world, or a program that my agency is employing with, where there's some opportunities in the southern states to do, you know, something different than that as urbanized maybe as remote. So my thought is to, yeah, rather than just keep our program and that's ours and go start your own and we'll all be out there, you know, creating that pathology and who's going to self-texture and that's what you felt that. But rather than try to make it something from possibly in terms of people, you know, somebody from down in that area that has the problem set. Logically big, but there are of you over the course of several years and stay with me. But keep the integrity by saying, you know, here's the shell, you know, you take the website, maybe create an advisory board across, you know, several of the host entities so that, you know, you can agree on what the structure is going to be and what someone does there. You know, we've all been that way, you know, by the time you get done with the fourth generation, somebody's bringing their conference, it's got the same manager conference, but it doesn't look like it. And then what happens is, in the professional world, people look and they say, I did so-and-so, and they didn't go to the good one, they go, So that's where I'd like to go. I'd like to see it grow. I'd like to, you know, see it become part of what I see as Tony and his staff, you know, ongoing network.
I feel like they're giving them a little jersey and some things to get through.
So that's why I said, you know, my talk for the next one was focused on broadening, you know, that's why I went real and said, why don't you guys sponsor some people from your membership? And I'm going to be bell ringing over the next few months, you know, fall. I'm going to be bell ringing IBPTA, and trying to encourage, you know, as many sponsors as we can across the variety of the larger national group. I think we'll be in better position because the problem we're in is always that way with the first one. You know, it's the first one, you have to wait for the money to come, you have a limited amount of time to get ready, you have time to get it, you know, which is, you know, now you can lock and date, you've got some credibility in the first one, so, you know, that's one of the things we learned is it'll be that much easier to start recruiting. The last one, we only had to wait for the partner. We knew exactly what the agenda was, because there was no way people could sell it. Now, George has been out, he's fostered a, you know, he's done presentations at CRP, he's done presentations at the actual in the meeting, so now I've got executives that I run into from around the country that go up, you know, push our up next academy, you know, we'll have somebody, that, you know, and that, so I think that's working its way there, so we'll have a lot more lead time and a lot more ability, but also there's an opportunity to go out amongst other groups instead. You know, I'm not going to speak to close that, you know, as brilliant as Ann is on this movement, and as a great indicator on our date, that we know every aspect. We're having stuff to look and say, you know, it's good, but that program, unless it focuses, you know, I'm going to be channeled down. You know, that's been an incredible drug, now in the channels that have three people facing the case. So if somebody looks at that and says, you know, this could bring in this discussion of agricultural energy, you know, bring in, you know, sharing excellent Purdue or whoever. That would make a big difference because that's something for me that's really important for me to hear along with other stuff. So, you know, I invite people that, you know, that last agenda is up on the web, you know, look at that and say, you know, I'm going to get to that, whatever. Or, you know, this time around, we had, you know, we had a crunch to fill stuff. We weren't paying speakers that way. Luckily, we had some budget, so we didn't have to pay much of it. So I've got a lot of real projects right now going on with CSX and I know the shortage is getting, you know, regional projects getting those people, but it would be nice to get somebody in from CSX so that we're not always hearing or new people, we're not always hearing, you know, that one. And that is the one thing that we took out of it in our own criticism is in a fabulous job, but just for the training and unsure funding, because unless we had enough attendees, we weren't going to break even. You know, so, you know, cut back on the risk of the church across the street. It will be said as our own self-assessment. New Jersey would be great because it would be the optimum place, maybe, in many ways for us. But you can't make it New Jersey so tricky because that's not what you're trying to teach. You're trying to teach your name
anyway. Since the 10 o'clock class is coming up, is there a way you could submit applications in order to say, when is anybody got it, and then you could score? So then depending on whether there's one scholarship, two, five, whatever, here's the rankings. Based on your perspective, you're independent, you don't know the news. Might not serve the process, it doesn't take too long to figure out, well, who should go.
That's the thing about that, yeah.
But
once we log in the date, which we expect to do in the next 2 months, we're working on, we probably have it right now, we're putting an agreement on the date because we're feeling ourselves not running into some other stuff and getting some commitment out of at least some of the facilities that we want to do. We're moving more far. Yeah, I mean, once we know where we're going, we sort of know our candidate pool. There's no reason we can't open it up to applications and just start receiving it.
Okay.
And then we have a ranking process. I want to look forward to the ranking process.
So,
let
people know where they stand.
If I could, to come back to the question you gave just a minute ago, if you look forward and you were talking about 2011, really, you folks see a benefit to your yourself and your agencies in the region partnering with recommendations that need to respond to something like this, and, you know, some logical theory in our region?
Yeah.
Yeah. Most likely, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we're just saying, we're actually talking about this idea of rather than giving a constitution with everybody else, you know, could we look more widely at the major cities and talking to them about maybe the alternating one, you know, years, so we go someplace else and do something. And we have on, we basically, you know, I'll give you the quick one shot. What we basically found is, when we had money allocated to it, there's obviously time in the district setting up, you know, just to get, you know, bubbling out, putting curriculum together. And it's more chasing down, you know, getting the commitment. The instructor actually does a lot of program actually work for the general realm, so, you know, we're not seeing things. But there is a time commitment involved, and, you know, we only have four staff, so we have a contract that, you know, from some of our work to a contract with the consulting team. So, you know, there's a cost involved with sort of the setup, and that was, you know, the coalition program. The scholarships were just something, again, out of our work plan, there was a decision made, 16 of our money in scholarships. The physical cost of the academy itself, on-site cost, that $3,500 basically covered facilities and meals, transportation, the on-site logistics for the, you know, for the support staff that was there. And, you know, and certainly the technical experts, you know, need to be there and to drive that stuff. So that covered that cost at least. So it's like the development cost is over here in the fine tuning. And there, we've got some money budgeted this time around, but we have to take things into. But that portion is the, is meant to be self-sustaining, and that's about that number. The 30 was obviously the number of what we needed. And again, you know, you pick a location, and I'll give you an example. There was some discussion about doing, at one point there was a discussion about, there were people concerned about cleaning the joint. I think it was growing on the side and up that. And there was a discussion among our members about staying in the city. And you can drag into doing this for the potential world. Thank you. many of our field people, you know, like having a logo on the Earth Center website. But the other thing the university brought was frankly, it did bring this institutional concept of this was truly a education experience. So, yes, when you were putting this piece of paper and selecting relevant, it means time. You know, the governor says no, he's going to travel. There's no secretary of transportation for the staff and stuff. And we're talking about acting like a business. And then telling people they can't go anywhere. That doesn't make any sense. You know, when they took this piece of paper and they looked at it, it was all the way down to here. Extremely genuine, from very good, some clear, you know, private sector involvement. The university on the continuing education unit. That they bring, you know, all the elements that they would have, you know, back when state government and local government was in a position, frankly, to create professional development in their white collar professional staff. And it's gone. We've gone on that basis. We've gone on that basis. We've gone on that basis. Almost gone.
So you could just look at this movie. Just
there's no language you should go and make it.
Just a recommendation. I was co-chair of a national World Eye Chance Conference. I don't know anything about world. But one of the things they did is the year before, the meeting was on the kids' time I can, and they sent, you know, the co-chair for the next conference. They said, well, if you're going to plan that conference, you better go to the one before so you go with your eyes wide open, but you're getting into it. So this group really must have a Chicago 2011 meeting. You have a co-chair for it now, since they you are definitely going to the great tank, or else don't do it. And because you're confused, just kill yourself. And you won't know what you're doing.
So, I mean, so that would be my advice in terms of cost. You know, there's going to be some, you know, very wonderful data and experience stuff. And then, but the caution was for us, and that was a decision about scholarships and providing development money. But when we looked at the cost pressure for the first one, from all of the, you know, background development in regards to moral theory is very clear that we need to be doing something that wasn't just a terrorist or something else. And if we reached out and determined that it didn't provide any value, then it was an exercise to say it's not needed. So, you know, if we could have incorporated all that cost, it would have been, you know, beyond reasonable. But again, the Operations Academy, that was a great opportunity for us to really get to look at a lot of what they did. And they pretty much have done a lot of first schools to do that. Their 2-week program runs around 4,600, but they're saying, I mean, there are academies, there are such things as dormitory types and much. Yeah. Well, I was never on that.
Well, I think we had some great discussions when it was
Yeah, I don't know. That's why I'm here. Thank you. Thank you.